Welcome back to Women Making Moves, where we celebrate the moves that women are making. My name is Amy Pons. I'm a master certified life coach and an energy healer. I'm joined today with Alicia Galati. Alicia has been listening to podcasts since 2015 and knows what goes into creating a standout podcast that captures your audience's attention even before they press play. Alicia's helped coaches and thought leaders launch and maintain over 50 podcasts and has developed a signature, thorough system to launching and managing podcasts so you don't have to stress about anything falling through the cracks. Alicia lives in sunny North Carolina with her two kiddos and husband. When not helping her clients, Alicia can be found reading over 200 books a year, hiking and exploring the zoo with her boys. What is Alicia's favorite podcast? Alicia's ears have been fine-tuned for high-quality audio, and she can only tolerate impeccable podcasts. She enjoys listening to heavily produced storytelling podcasts like Greeking Out by National Geographic's Kids when she takes long road trips with her kids. Alicia, welcome.
Thank you, Amy. I am so excited to be here. I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
I think so, too. Oh, my gosh. This is a well-known fact with my guests. I purposely don't read a bio before because I like to have a unique experience or first glimpse at it. And as you can hear and tell, I really trip over because I'm thinking back about what I just read so that I can connect with you. And sometimes it just does not, it's not conducive to like how I speak it.
You're good.
I love the spelling of your name. It's so unique. And as I can imagine, you know, as we talked about before we hit record, is it Alicia? Is it Alicia? Is it Alisa? I've heard it all. So maybe we start there.
Yeah. So I am Alicia. That's how my dad says my name. He's the one who named me. And so it's always been Alicia. I also have Puerto Rican heritage. And so they would always just call me Alicia and they don't care. It just doesn't matter. That's what it is. I have also done a lot of research of my name because it is so uniquely spelled, A-L-E-S-I-A, that when I realized that there was a whole battle fought by Julius Caesar, that I was like, oh, Battle of Alicia. Okay, cool. And realizing that that's still a French city today. How fascinating is that? And then I met a French guy when I was in college. And he goes, oh, Alicia. And I was like, a what? A hoopy weddy? And he was like, no, it's Alicia, the city. That's so cool. I love your name. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, it's very interesting. So it's Alicia, like Legion. But honestly, I will respond to pretty much anything at this point because most people, they see it and they just assume. And that's okay. Like, I really am, I'm not offended.
How amazing are you? I think I would get in my feelings. I'd be like, can we start with pronouncing my name correctly? But also, I can imagine that can take a lot of your energy if that's all you do every day, you know? And so I'm excited to know it's Alicia, but also could be Alicia.
Yes.
Has there been a battle of Alicia in your life?
Oh, man. When is there not? If you have heard any of my story before, you will know that I grew up in a cult. And I would say my battle kind of started when I left and had to discover what was me, right? I was 21 when I left and realized, who in the world am I? I had been conditioned so much with what the world is, especially because it was a fundamentalist Christian cult, which means like follow the Bible. Children are meant to be seen, not heard, and barely seen at that. You don't have a voice. Your parent doesn't have a voice. You can't make good decisions for yourself. We are the only ones that know the way. And so when you get out of that and you're trying to decide, what kind of career should I have? Should I have children? Am I only having children because that's the womanly thing to do? Where do I fit in a male-dominated industry? I started my career in manufacturing, which is a very male-dominated industry. How do I express myself with poise, demand respect, also not be sexualized in a workplace like that, especially with how I grew up and just like wearing certain clothes, but then also trying to own how I wanted to dress while also working in a male dominated. It like there was just so many conflicting things happening. I remember after I'd had my first kid, I was trying to get pregnant with my second one and a coworker said, oh, this mutual friend of ours, She wants to go to an intro to yoga class. Would you want to go? And my very first thought, and this is why I say you're not responsible for your first thought, those intrusive thoughts, those like initial gut feelings that are like, oh, wait, no, that's not actually me. Those are not actually my thoughts. Okay. My initial thought was, oh, no, that's satanic. I can't do that. And I was like, wait a minute. Pause. Who said that it was satanic? Who said that I can't do that? And then I started exploring those feelings and exploring yoga in a way that I was like, okay, this feels good. And if it feels good, then is it actually bad? I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not hurting myself. I'm better for it. I got pregnant while I was in the class. Like, come on. So yeah, that was my battle, I would say, was rediscovering who I am as a person and as a self.
Thank you for sharing that. And not to minimize any experience you have lived, I feel really resonant when you talk about the training, programming, conditioning. And while I was never in what someone would call a mainstream cult, I was never part of that. But I also resonate with what you're saying, such as being conditioned and trained and to believe that there's only one right way. For me growing up, it was, you go to church every Sunday, up is good, down is bad. It's just like right and wrong. Everything is binary. Nothing is duality. And so that never landed with me. This is like 42-year-old Amy talking. We're taking an interpretation of what like primarily a group of white men say about a text that was originated not even in Christianity from, thousands, whatever, of wherever you believe it came from and started. So I was like, I just never vibe. It was like, I did it because I was made to, but just never landed. But I never was like, I wasn't like against it, but it was just like, I don't vibe. And then the new kind of conditioning programming when I entered the corporate workspace was again, the exhaustion. I was conforming and contorting into someone that was never me. And gratefully, so like I think about the first 20 years of my life was very conformed into this one way of thinking. It was probably mostly toward maybe religion. And then the second 20 was conformed and contorted into the world of showing up as a mid-aged white man. I'm not against corporate. I'm not against the workplace. I'm not against anything. I have space and love and light. That's what my vibe is. But also, I knew that me personally as Amy, my soul, was not thriving in places that were dictated and created by systems from 100 years ago rooted in white supremacy, patriarchy, and late stage capitalism. So all of
Yeah.
that came to a head from the first 20, the second 20, and now I'm on my third 20 years of life. And I awakened into the soul essence that no matter what you vibe with, for me, it's ultimately returning back to your soul essence. Who are you? And I really land with what you're talking about, which is clearing away that conditioning. And oh, by the way, if that is you and you vibe and subscribe to that, that's not a bad thing too. It's just allowing everyone to come in with their unique brilliance, their soul essence. And I find that more are shifting into what you and I are feeling and allowing space for around us. It just hasn't been the norm, at least in my life, like ever.
Yeah, it's been a lot of deconditioning, honestly. Like, even today, I've been out of the cult for over 10 years now, going on like 11 or 12, something like that. And I still have thoughts of like, oh, this is right or this is wrong. And I have to pause and say, is that actually what I think? Or was this a trauma response? Or is this someone else's thoughts that I just haven't had a chance to explore for myself, right? And that has been really insightful for me even now. And I'll talk to my kids about it. Like, we push very heavily for our kids to question everything, to question us, to question the norm. And exemplifying that too in our own relationships, like, mom being the working one, dad is the stay-at-home parent. He's the one who homeschools, and mom works and she likes to work and she doesn't really like to deal with kids all day. And that is okay, right? Like, bucking that norm for our boys to see that when they grow up, they don't just have to be corporate dudes or corporate bros. Like, we talk about all the different career options that they're going to have and the things that they have access to now. And yeah, I think that it helps to be able to exemplify that to our kids as well, because hopefully that'll help them. be better adults as they grow.
That's really beautiful. And that's what we meaning the entrepreneurs out there or any of the humans out here, encouraging stepping outside of what we've always been told. So like I have a sign behind me that says, think a thought you were not taught. And when I'm working with clients, there's a lot of things that always come up because it's not only what we've experienced in this lifetime, we download from the moment of conception in our mother's womb, we download the entire lineage. So we've got things coming in from 3, 4, 5 generations before us. So in my lineage, I downloaded what it feels like to be like to, it was literally illegal to be a woman. So that's where a lot of my activism comes from, specifically toward women's rights, women's autonomy, and making sure I'm doing as much as I can every single day. And that's really where Women Making Moves came from, was that this is a place to explore our intersectional feminism and start to dismantle the things that we always knew. And we're all here doing that. We're not out here doing the work that we do or saying the things that we're saying just for our generation. It's for those coming after us. And I think that what I experienced in the corporate world was that the generations that created the workplace, many of them weren't really interested that much in changing it. And so it's just going to take a little bit longer. And I'm brushing a broad stroke. I know that there are a lot of activists out there in every generation. But what I do see is a lot of, especially women, leaving the structured 9-to-5 workplace because it just not only doesn't work for us, it's also very harmful. You've probably seen a lot of things about like remote work is feminist. Until that happens, women are just going to leave the workforce. Okay. And then what do we do?
Yeah. Thankfully, I had already, when I lost my job due to COVID, and I loved my corporate job. Like, I mean, granted, it wasn't like corporate. It was more manufacturing, right? I loved my 9-to-5. I loved the ability to leave my house and go do adult stuff and then come home, right? And so I loved that. But then COVID happened. I got let go and I had to decide, what in the world am I going to do? I also have asthma. So the idea of getting COVID was quite terrifying for me. Having small children, all of that, I was just like, this is a lot and I don't know what to do. And so I had already been dabbling in the online space for a few years at that point, thankfully. Otherwise, I don't know really what I would have done. And then was able to say, you know, I had already my virtual business to podcasting. Let's go. Balls to the walls. Let's do it. let's just go all in. And here we are 4 years later and it's still working.
Of course it is. How many podcasts do you have now?
So I personally have 2, but we manage about 15 every week, my team and I. Yeah.
Wow. So you're both a host and a producer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
So when pitches come to you, like for instance, if I were to come to you and say, Alicia, will you produce Women Making Moves? Is there ever a podcast that comes to you and you're like, nope?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Sure. Yes. Yeah. So first and foremost, in my intake form, I have very clearly laid out, do you believe in equity for all? And you can either select yes or no. And if you say no, I'm not going to work with you. Sorry, not sorry. That just doesn't align with my values.
People hit no.
Yeah. Has been one person who has selected no. And I just said, look, I don't think it's aligned. I will happily send you referrals to other people who don't really care about these things and send them business, but I am not going to work with you. The other thing is I also have the budget in there of here's where our prices tend to land. What's your budget? And that allows me to clearly see, is this someone that I can really help based on what my values are, because money is in my values.
Yes.
It's paying myself a living wage and paying my team a living wage. Those are really important values to me. And if I can't uphold those with the clients that I bring in, then I can't help you. Sorry, not sorry.
How incredible that you are showing up for yourself. So here's the thing that I will always say to people. All money is not good money. What I mean by that is be mindful of the energy that you bring into your business and your orbit, because everything is energy. So let's say that you take in, I don't know, 3 clients that are not your frequency or not your vibe. That is going to then bring in more of the same. To then you start to sacrifice your, and you said it perfectly, when you start to sacrifice your values in the name of, let's say, capitalism or patriarchy or white supremacy, it's someone who does not align. That brings you, it brings you back a little bit in terms of energy and what you're wanting to do ultimately in the world and in your business. Because for me, and I'm sensing this from you, correct me if I'm wrong, we're in this not to just make money. It's part of our values, like, but it's an energetic exchange that we're making with the world and where we're presenting, we're walking into the world that we're creating the world we want to see and live in and for the generation after.
Yes, 100%. I really like to go back to my values a lot. And honestly, that has helped steer us clear of people that would not be aligned, but also allows me to really remember what it is that I want to do in the world. And going back to my original story, like growing up in a cult, not having a voice, my mom not having a voice, the women there not having a voice, being able to be a catalyst for other people's voices who have been systemically suppressed or quieted, that lights me up. And I know it lights my team up. And so being able to not only just amplify the voices of the people we work with, but also inspire the listeners to make a difference and to change their lives and to do better, like that honestly is worth it. Like, yes, also I need to make money. So well, yeah. Keeping aligned with all the values, right? Not just the, oh, I got to make money. Cool. It's also doing work that we really love to do.
It all gets to be true. I always encourage everyone, and you brought this up earlier, is like when feelings come in, being mindful, is it mine? Also trying to understand, like, if you do feel some stickiness or ickiness around it, where is it coming from? Which energy center? And I deal with the chakras a lot. Is it a feeling thought or a thought feeling? It's all energy and we work through it. So I'm curious how you think about this situation. I've been at an interesting intersection crossroads of my unique purpose. I'm a healer and a truth teller. So my healing energy wants to give safe space, create a safe container for any human in this world. And my truth telling, sacred rage activism, if you come at me sideways, I will be able to discern quickly of what kind of energy you're bringing in. Is it from a place of like ignorant bliss and you literally don't know anything different? Then I will engage and have a conversation in the spirit of love and light, and that I'm trying to help everybody raise their vibration and their awareness. Again, thinking thoughts they were not taught. If you come at me with some not clean energy and try to disrupt my vibe, ooh, that's where we go to sacred rage. Do you have that crossroad? I mean, we're all intersectional, of course, and multifaceted and so gorgeously human. Do you have a crossroads there that, or is it just like, nope?
So I want to bring up something that I believe it was on Brené Brown's podcast. They were talking, I don't know where the research comes from, so don't quote me here, but this idea of safe spaces is problematic in a lot of places, right? Here, it's not, because we know our values align, right? You and I, potentially the listeners, the values align. So this is a safe space because we know each other. We know that our values are here. But in corporate settings, in more interactional settings with randos, right? Those aren't safe spaces.
You're right.
And so the way that they describe it on the podcast was brave spaces, which I think combines your two really well, of like wanting to create safe space, but also having that righteous anger, right? Of combining those two, of saying, yes, this is a safe space. And it's also a brave space where we feel that we can talk about these things and we can have open conversations and we can do better.
Yes.
I like to kind of bring that in.
Alicia, you just changed the game for me. And I remember now you brought this up during one of our pod collective meetings. So I love the challenge because, yes, to your point, when someone signs in to work with me as a coach, of course, we create a safe space. We've aligned and agreed upon the work in which that will take place. And then they've also given me beautiful sacred consent to tap into their energy. To your point, ooh, I'm not safe when someone comes in with their energy and I get to choose whether I opt in or opt out of that energy, but also that conversation. So I love the distinction. I know earlier I said I would love to create safe space for any human on this earth. I would say now, after hearing what you said, it's like an and they need to meet me to be able to create that safe space as well. Otherwise, it might be encroaching on my values.
Right. So you think safe space for who? Right. So when you're talking about a corporate setting of white guys and maybe one or two black women and a few white women, who is the space safe for?
Oh, white men.
Exactly.
1,000,000%
So,
white men.
right. And so it's about creating a brave space where we can bring these things collectively to the attention and still feel safe. And so when it goes back to like giving my potential clients a hard no, and we have let people in that were not aligned. And honestly, it messed up an entire year for me where I was like, I let people in because I was excited to work with them. They were excited to work with me. And the values, not even just the values, but the way that we like to work, it just did not mesh well at all. And it made me so scared to enter into more of that. And so I had to work. It's okay to get more people in. Not everybody is going to be like those previous clients because it was like three in a row, like you mentioned, three in a row that were just not great. Some of them made my team cry and I had to fight people. Like, come on. And so that whole year, I was just like, how can I create systems in place? How can I say no better? Asking better questions, not just in the intake form, like what we talked about, but also during the conversation. How involved do they actually, if they already have a podcast, do they like to be in the process? If they like to have their hands in it, which is okay, they're not for me because I like people that can just say, here you go, have fun with it. And let me have fun because I will. And I will make you sound awesome and we will get your show out there and all of the fun stuff. And also trust that I'm an expert. But if you're going to micromanage me, micromanage my team, that's not good for me and that's not okay with me. And so we would rather pass on that money and I will send you to someone else who doesn't have those types of boundaries set because they don't necessarily need them. And that's okay.
That's more than okay. That's so exquisite because you uphold you and letting them be them too. It's like it's such a beautiful energetic exchange when you can say, this isn't a good fit. And I think for so long, because as a society and because of late stage capitalism, we've only been worried about the money. And I've done it too, Alicia. Like in my business, I've been up for a year. And to your point, I have such pangs heading in. I've had pangs heading into those sessions because I'm like, oh shit, I don't know what this is going to be today. And here's the hard part. You knew right away, didn't you?
Honestly, within the first few weeks, I was like,
Exactly.
oh no. And so, what I ended up doing is I said, my contract's for 3 months. At the end of the month, at the end of the month and a half, however long it was, where I just had to say enough is enough, I said, we're going to pause your contract or we're going to cancel your contract here. You have already paid up for all the work that we've done up to this point. I will not charge you for the balance. I have zero desire to charge you for the balance. This is not aligned as a fit anymore. Here are some people that you can go to instead. I'm sorry. And honestly, they felt the same. They weren't feeling supported because I wasn't supporting them in the way that I felt I can support people. They were asking of me something that I could not honestly give them because it's not how I work. And so realizing that, okay, this is mutually a beneficial agreement to separate was, oh, okay.
You're amazing.
I should have done this away a while ago.
What a relief, but you still honored it, So it's the duality of trusting your intuition, of knowing that's a good fit for both of you. Then the second piece is trusting so hard that by moving that non-energetic match out of the way, you call in what is an energetic match. But you got to have that second piece. That's critical. If you don't have that, then you're going to hold on to the tough match.
Yeah, for sure. And it can be hard to get over, right? Of, oh man, that didn't work. Is something wrong with me? Is something wrong with my processes? How? And you know what's interesting is that I was very visible right before these three people came in. And so I dialed it back like 100
You were safe.
degrees because I was terrified. Am I too visible in the wrong places? And where do I want to be? Where do I want to be visible? And so that has led me to now really being very clear and strategic with where I want my leads to come from, how I want to interact with people, having those upfront conversations within the initial process before money's even exchanged to be super clear on setting the expectation, not just on what they can expect from me, but what I can expect from them. Because we're gonna have to work together. And if it's not gonna work, it's not gonna work. No, thank you.
No, thank you. And yet, there doesn't have to be drama. It's just like honoring both. So beautiful. What moves are you excited to be making right now?
So this seems maybe counterintuitive for a few people, but we're actually opening up more of a personal brand side to Galati Media, which I'm really excited about. Historically, we've only been able to really support people with high ticket, full service offers. And so if someone is a more indie podcaster or they're not making money from their podcast yet, or they just don't have the capital to afford us, historically, the only way that they could get me is through my own podcast, which not everybody likes that medium, right? And so I've started offering this year workshops. I started offering mini courses, downloadables. So pretty much just creating this digital library where people who can't afford us yet still have access to me, right? Because that's really important. And a lot of people come for me. And so that, and then being able to give them just the resources that they need from a perspective that isn't the guy who's telling them there's only one way to do it, which I'm finding a lot in this space and kind of made me kick myself in the butt and say, okay, this is the time, let's do it. Because if this guy's telling them that and thousands of people are listening to him, what about the people that look like me? Who do they have to listen to? Who do they have to tell them that your way is okay? That it is all right to do things how you want. And you don't have to have a podcast constantly to be successful. There are other ways to make the most of your content. There are other ways, a limited series or being a guest only on other people's podcasts. There's so many ways to get your voice out there. So another move that I'm excited about is not being tied to places that I don't enjoy. So I feel like I have constantly just said, oh, I have to be live on social media. I have to be visible. I have to be in all these places. And I've started to say, do I like showing up there? No? Okay. We don't have to show up there. Or that's where the fluff content goes, or that's where the stuff for the podcast goes. But where do I want to show up? And that is in places like this, one-on-one conversations, collectives, intimate conversations where I don't have to feel like I'm putting on a tap dance for a million people. It's just intimate and it's one-on-one and it feels energizing. And it feels really good and it feels easy because it gets to be easy. It doesn't have to be hard. And I think so often we're told, oh, hustle, we got to go. It's got to be hard. And if it doesn't feel hard, then you're not working. Like, no, it gets to be easy.
You're calming my nervous system right now.
Yay.
Coming from almost 20 years in corporate marketing where it was just the one right way, and you probably get this all day, every day in your business, people reaching out. And I've actually just closed some of my profiles that not just anybody can contact me because I can't. I just choose not to have that energy come in where it's like, is your business struggling? Want to make 50K?
God.
All
Yeah.
that. And it's, just no. Marketing felt icky for me when I first came out of corporate and started my own business. And I'm like, ew, I don't want to do all the marketing. Like I was just like rejecting it. A lot of healing, a lot of healing. And it's an and. I know that the universe is going to match me with people that I'm calling in and that can hear me and that are really amazing together. And I put myself into places to your point that don't make me feel bad. Like, and I also don't belabor on like how often or where often or all this. Like, I just like, I feel called. I put something out there and I trust that the universe is going to send me my energetic match. That's beautiful. And imagine saying that to someone who is very staunch in the only one right way where you show up all day, every day and burn yourself to the ground to get the leads and all this. I'm not suggesting anyone's right or wrong. I'm saying that that is not a match for me. And so I flow and I follow my energy and intuition and flow. And to your point, this, you and I are creating such a gorgeous, energetic ripple right now. This is what it's about.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? You get to say no, right? Like, I think so often we think we have to follow all the industry experts or follow our competition. And you know what? I don't subscribe to that at all. I do not like knowing what other people in my industry are doing. I don't like to know what other people who are direct competitors of mine are doing. Even female entrepreneurs who run pod agencies, I'll be friends with you and I'll send you referrals. And I like to know who you are and that your values align so I can send you referrals. But that's as far as it goes. I'm not following your content on social media. I might like, hey, we're friends, cool, but I will unfollow because I don't want to see your stuff in my feed. And that's okay.
I love your vibe. No one can do what we do, how we do it. So, like, when someone's like, who's your competition? I'm like, I don't have any. I don't, because I have my unique brilliance. You have yours. That's it. And I respect anyone who it is what it is. You do you. I want to bring up a post that you've made recently, and this has actually never happened to me. So I'm curious what leads up to it. So has a guest ever asked you to remove their episode after airing? As hosts, it's an uncomfortable situation to navigate. Here are some best practices for handling these delicate requests. Take a step back before reacting. More often than not, it has nothing to do with your hosting. Include clear language and intake forms stating you can use, distribute, and edit the content as needed. This protects both parties. Consider sensitively editing parts of concern versus full removal. As the creator, you know best how to resolve issues and have an open discussion to understand their perspective fully. Look for a win-win compromise through empathy and problem solving. Your relationship should take priority over being right. With clear agreements and communication, what seems difficult can become an opportunity for growth. Alicia, this is fascinating. I actually haven't had this happen. So, and you're helping me learn. I don't have some of these things in my agreements, so maybe I add them.
Yeah, so in reference to that, that is part of the Successful Podcasting Unlocked podcast. It's where I have 10 minutes or less solo episodes where I answer podcasting questions. And so that was one of the questions that came up in my research, as well as in conversations that I've had of having a guest say, and we've had a client do this where a guest came in and said, oh, I mentioned this person who was my boyfriend at the time, we've since broken up. The relationship has soured. I don't want that episode out into the world. And so, what are your options? Right. Obviously, the client came to me freaking out. I don't know what to do. So, I said, first and foremost, pause. Right. It's not a reflection of you or the conversation that you had with that person. More likely than not, it's something they said that they just didn't want aired. And so, how can you kind of the same as what we've talked about before in relationships and in getting new clients in, how can you make sure that you maybe don't mention those things to mitigate those issues later? So, I brought up my growing up in a cult, but if you had an intake form that said, is there anything that you don't want to talk about? Maybe it's public, some semi-public knowledge that I grew up in a cult, and maybe I just didn't want to have that conversation because I didn't feel that this was a safe space to do that. Then I would say, I don't want to talk about that topic. That would allow you initially to say, okay, good to know. Now I know not to discuss that because that doesn't feel safe for that person here. Cool. So having those initial things within the intake form can help you figure out the best way to navigate those conversations, but then also having some type of thing in your almost contractual that says that the recording you own, that they can't take it and use it without permission, that you're allowed to disseminate it and distribute it to people because it is your content, right? You are the host. You are facilitating it. You are editing it. You're putting in the time, money, and effort to create it. But going back to, okay, they said something that maybe later they wanted to take out. How can you navigate that in the best way possible? First, step back. Second, get a better understanding of what it is that they're actually wanting. Is it that they want that one section about the ex-boyfriend taken out? Or is it the whole conversation that they feel doesn't align with their values anymore? If so, instead of saying, nope, it's my content, I get to put it up wherever I can, which you could say, right? Like you really could do that if you wanted to. I would say most people probably won't. They'll usually say something along the lines of, okay, we can take it out, but then how do you keep that relationship alive, right? Because it can feel really sticky when you've got that kind of relationship where it's like, oh, I need you to take it down. And then maybe my feelings as the host are offended. because I feel like maybe it's a slight to my content and what I've created, and now I gotta come up with something else to put there, or maybe I gotta come up with a different idea. And so how can you make the most of that conversation without burning bridges if that's your desire, right? So you can say, all right, no problem, I'll take it down and move on with your life. That's fine. But how can you kind of take it a step further and keep that relationship alive in a really meaningful way that feels good for you and also for them? Having them come back and re-record an update, re-record a new episode with you that doesn't talk about that topic, right? That would be a great way to invite them back in and show, hey, no hard feelings. I loved your content. I love what you're about. That's fine. We can delete that past episode, but can we record something new to put in there? So that way I'm not missing content in there, right? Tons of different ways that you can do it and go about it. And it's really about communicating, having a bit of empathy and realizing, okay, it's not me. It's them. Like, really? It is them. It's their feelings and what they're kind of viewing it as. Good to know. And also, and this is something that we do very heavily for our clients, which definitely sets us apart from a lot of the other producers in the industry, is that we actually edit for values of the host. So, especially in election years, where people want to talk about whatever they want to talk about. And if the host does not feel aligned with talking about political stuff, we remove all mention of that. Nobody shows up either way. And it's up to the host to say, here we go, this is how this is going to go. But my team knows, here are the values. This doesn't align with what the listener needs. This doesn't align with the host's values. We take it out. Like, we don't ask our clients, oh, should we take out that curse word on that show that you don't allow cursing on? No, we take it out. It's just like we do. And so even on my podcast, I had a guest where he said some pretty not nice things about the women in his life. And I was like, yeah, take it out. One, it makes him show up as a jerk. So I don't want to do that to him first and foremost. And also, I don't want my content to show up that way. So take it out. And that's okay.
Yeah. You know, now that you're explaining this, so I have a lot of guests because of the work that I do with psychological safety in the workplace. I do interview a lot of guests, and we've been live for about a year, that are in various stages of litigation with a former employer. So I will have that come up sometimes. It's like, oh, shoot, I said X, Y, or Z, and I'll go back and I'll take it out. And I just hadn't been thinking about it from a lens of like someone feeling some type of way about something they put out. So, but again, I would always be like, oh, of course I'll go back and take something out. So, and it has nothing to do with me, to your point. Like, it's something that they're like, ooh, should that be out there? And I would love to think that I have the same right to do that with anybody else. To your point, have a conversation. So Alicia, as we start to wind down, I've seen this kind of running joke out there. I'm sure you have too, like on SNL or other ways. It's like, everybody has a podcast, and it's kind of like poking fun at, nobody want to hear what you got to say, you know, like that kind of vibe. What are your thoughts on the trope of like, oh, seemingly everybody has a podcast these days? What are your thoughts?
Yes, I have lots of feelings on that. And that is not just because I'm in podcasting. So let's talk numbers, because that's how my brain works. There are anywhere from 3 to 5 million podcasts in the world, depending on what player you're looking at. If you're looking at Spotify versus Apple, the number changes. Anywhere from 3 to 5 million. 400,000 are active. So if you think about that, and you think about, yes, everyone has a podcast, but that's not your competition. And with the rise of people listening to podcasts, it's important that they have regular content that they can go to. And so your competition is not the show that stopped producing 5 years ago, but is still available to people. It's not the show that stopped producing a month ago and is still available to people. Your only competition is your past episodes and your past downloads and your past content, right? How are you able to show up better? And I think that if you approach podcasting with the idea that I'm going to show up and deliver valuable content to my audience, and I am going to show up as myself, those two things are going to help set you apart. Doesn't matter how many podcasts are out there in the world. There is always going to be someone who wants to know what it is that you're talking about, but wants to hear it from you. And I think that is where Like, it doesn't matter the numbers. It doesn't matter how many there are. It doesn't matter that everybody has a podcast because there are people that are seeking out the content from you because they don't want to hear someone else hear your stories. They want to hear your interpretation. They want to hear what it is that you bring to the table. And I think that especially with the rise of AI and with the rise of social content feeling very either informative and educational or fluff piece, right? It's either of those on social right now, it feels like. So how can we as podcasters have meaningful and deep conversations that can stand out in the crowd? Because here, we're not competing for swipes. We're not competing against an algorithm. Someone has literally pressed play and said, I want to listen to Amy and Alicia for about an hour, and which is incredible. Thank you. First and foremost, for being here. And like I have said, I want to be here for this. So show up. And if you do that, then they're going to be here. That's it.
I love that. It doesn't matter. So many people are, they're like, Amy, when's the book coming out? I'm like, book? This is my space. I realize beautifully, I don't want to write a book. I don't have that attention span, my ADHD brain. So this is my space where I beautifully celebrate my healing and truth telling. Some episodes are more spicy than the others. This one has been so calming with you. Like, I trust you so much, and we just vibe on that energetic frequency. And we're both spicy in certain arenas, but like, this has been a really beautiful space to share. This is my book, you know, I would say. Alicia, where can we find you?
Yes. First and foremost, thank you so much for having me, Amy. This has been such a lovely conversation and a little different than what I typically have. Usually people are like, tell me how to have a better podcast. And I'm like, sure, we can talk about that. But I like having this more personable side to the topics because we're people, right? And lots of stuff going on. So thank you for having me. If people are interested in getting to know me, I would recommend if you're wherever you're listening to this, that you go find me on your podcast player, Alicia Galati. Listeners to Leads or Successful Podcasting Unlocked, search any of those and you will find me. And you can also go to galatimedia.com. We have tons of podcasting resources over there for you as well.
Closing remarks as we wrap up.
I think it just goes back to do what works best for you. Doesn't matter what everybody else is doing. Do what works best for you and always go back to your values. Those two.
Thanks, Alicia.
Thank you.